my early days, of course, being in the church and, you know, hearing the gospel music and checking out the piano and organ was inspiring for me to want to play. And that's what got started about 7 to 8 years old. It all begun then.
So what made the jump from gospel and church music into the world of rock and roll and rhythm and blues and stuff like that?
Well, you know, playing church music was great and all that, but then I think I started hearing this organist, Billy Preston, and he was before me, of course, and he was doing a lot of church music, and then he got outside the church and was, you know, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and he was an avenue for me to see how to make that transition. I mean, I knew you had Jimmy Smith and Jimmy McGriffin and Shirley Scott, all these other jazz organists, but that was so far from what I was doing. But Billy Preston had that rock gospel church style, and I said, whoa. And that kind of, I kind of followed that pattern into the style music. You know, it was a bridge. Like, hey, you know, you can use this, but you can do it this way. You know, and it was something easier for me to do than some of the Jimmy Smith runs all over the place, which would not have been useful in what I'm doing anyhow.
So what were some of your early memories of seeing live secular music? Like outside of the church, what was the first time you saw like a rock concert?
Well, I didn't see a lot of live because my parents were very strict and all they knew was church, and that's where they wanted me. So I saw these people on American Bandstand and Don Kirshner's rock concert, you know, the shows that were out then, and they featured different artists. That's when I saw them. I was not able to go to those concerts.
So in the years leading up to joining the Jerry Garcia Band in 1980, what was your life like in music, and what set you up to make that connection with Jerry?
Well, it's a long story going there, but I was, you know, at that point I had worked with Elvin Bishop. He had the hit Fool Around and Fell in Love. I worked with Chuck Berry, Maria Mordauer, quite a few other artists. But at the time I was with the Elvin Bishop Band, and we were on a gig with the Jerry Garcia Band. I can't tell you year or the day, but I knew it was in San Diego. The first time Jerry heard me, because when I met Jerry, he told me about that. He told me that he'd asked at that concert, who was that on the organ? And I didn't know who Jerry was, never met him before, never thought in a million years I would be playing with him. And when the connection was made, which was through Maria Mordauer, you know, the lady had Midnight at the Oasis. Her boyfriend was John Kahn, was the bass player with Jerry Garcia Band. And so doing some work with Maria, and every now and then her bass player couldn't do a gig, John Kahn would sit in, you know. And so he made the connection. He asked me after, you know, 2 or 3 days of filling in, would I be interested in, you know, sitting in and playing with another band. He never told me who it was or anything. And one day I got a phone call. Hey, we've got a few gigs. Would you be interested in trying to do the gigs? And can you meet us up here and rehearse? And there it was, Jerry Garcia Band. Had no idea.
So you mentioned a minute ago that you didn't know about Jerry Garcia, but before that, what was it like to enter the world of Grateful Dead fandom and the sort of cult of worship around Jerry as a musician and a cultural figure?
At first, it was scary for me, moving into the unknown. And the only reason why, again, a church boy walking into a whole new world that you know nothing about. And it wasn't too long before me getting with Jerry that massacre happened with Jim Jones, a cult following. So here's a cult following. Grateful Dead, Jerry Garcia, hippie, fan. You know, and I remember walking into the first rehearsal, as I spoke about. I got there early because I wanted to make a good impression. You know, I'm on time. I am a real musician. I got there before they got there, and the person that takes care of the place let me in. He was expecting me. And so I walk into the doors of the front street is where their warehouse was. And the first thing I saw are all these big backdrops, the logo backdrops, and every last one had to do with a skeleton. a skeleton with a rose in his hair, a skeleton with a violin in his hand, a skeleton of that skeleton. And so I don't know what's going on. You know, I know nothing about this, and I don't know these people. And I'm walking to that, and I'm saying, what in the hell is going on here? You know, but, you know, after time, you know, it's a whole, you find out these are the most lovingest folks on the face of the earth. You know, these people are like, oh, my God, they don't get no better than this. But I didn't know that until, you know, weeks to come. You know, I was really kind of like, what am I getting involved with? I was more scared of everything, like, you know, what's going on here? But I quickly found out, and I've been there ever since, and I'm still there today.
Over the 15 years you were in the Jerry Garcia Band, what are some of your favorite memories from playing live?
Well, you know, watching the band, because when we first started, we were doing Keystone, San Francisco, Keystone in Berkeley, Keystone in Palo Alto. And when we traveled, it was smaller clubs or small theaters. And watching the band go from where I started with the Garcia Band to doing the same arenas that the Grateful Dead was doing, NASA, Madison Square Garden, I mean, the L.A., the convention centers, Oakland, the big venues, you know, how he had grown, you know. Of course, that was over the course of, like you said, 15 years, but just watching the band grow. And there were a lot of, met some great people with Bill Graham and lawyers and key people out of New York with, like, the main judges and things like that. You know, it was just a big history. The whole thing was a history lesson for me. You know, I'm still this guy like, whoa, what's happening here? What is all of this? And selling out arenas and people hollering and screaming. I wasn't used to all of that. And it was great. The memory just goes on, you know. But I think the most one is when we went to Hawaii. There were special moments of traveling to Hawaii with Jerry.
I wanted to ask you about Hawaii. Earlier this year, Garcia Live Volume 10 came out, which is an archival recording of the Jerry Garcia Band in Hawaii back in 1990. What memories do you have with that concert?
I don't remember the concert very well. Obviously, there were taping shows that I never thought would become a concert. I have not heard. I know it's out, but I haven't heard it yet. But they were taping, you know, back then, and that was not on my mind what was going on, taping and trying to make a great impression for a recording, because you didn't think it would ever be a live show. The thing that I enjoyed the most was watching Jerry go scuba diving. You know, it was a place, we went to Hawaii, and we were over there maybe 12 days with two shows, so it was more like a vacation for us. A paid vacation, you know. And so to be able to watch him do what he loved outside of the music was, you know, something I really enjoyed. You know, there's a different smile on his face when he did that. Different kind of smile.
How would the band assemble set lists? Like, how would you put together the collection of covers and originals from the Garcia catalog?
Well, most of that was Jerry and John that decided what they were going to do that night. Jerry just write on a little piece of paper songs that we were going to do that night, and it was totally, you know, his choice. Unlike the Grateful Dead, I don't know how they operated, but unlike them, I do know that the Jerry Garcia Band was what he wanted to do solo. It wasn't a voting, it wasn't a equal partnership. It was just the Garcia Band, we were in his band. So everything was done by him.
So I'm interested in, after the death of Jerry Garcia, how did you transition into the JGB as it exists today?
Well, John Kahn, I think about 6 months after Jerry had passed, John Kahn contacted the surviving members and asked us, would we be interested in doing a couple gigs? He had got talked to a promoter, and I think there was some interest in doing a couple gigs at Palookaville in Santa Cruz. I think it was the name of the venue. It's called Palookaville. And so he called us all, and yes, you know, we hadn't worked, and yeah, everybody was willing to do this. With some additional people, new people that was not with the Garcia Band. And so they put tickets on sale, and they sold out so fast, they added a second night. So we didn't I don't recall rehearsing, but we did songs that everybody kind of knew. We picked songs that were like top 40 kind of things. They were not necessarily the songs, the repertoire that we did with the Jerry Garcia band, because this was a John Kahn band. And the likeness of Jerry, but a little different twist to it. So we did songs that easily Jerry would have done. It could have easily been in his repertoire, but we didn't do it. This was never brought to the Jerry Garcia band. So we did songs, I can't call the name of them anyhow. And so that night when we're performing, you know, it was very emotional because it was about 6 months after Jerry passed, and folks came out because nothing else was going on at that time after Jerry passed. I think the Grateful Dead shut down and said, well, no more Grateful Dead, and Bob Ware, no one was working. No one was working from that field. So folks really came out. And all night long, you know, you're seeing people weeping, tears, they're enjoying themselves, but they're missing Jerry, as they still are today. And I was able to hear them, you know, how they would holler out songs during the course of the concert, "Stop That Train," "Knock It On Heaven," you know, their favorite song, what they want to hear, you know. And so this was going on all night, the first night, and we didn't do any of those songs. We did, you know, new type of songs. And second night, we didn't do any of those songs. So I had a chance to see this, the place packed out. Folks were very emotional, but they still wanted to hear those songs. Well, we were going to go on tour with John Kahn and a John Kahn band because they were so successful, you know, people were looking at that. I think about 4 months before the tour was totally formed, John Kahn passed. And it ended that. Well, I'm the next longest guy that was in the Jerry Garcia band other than John Kahn. I was there 15, 16 years. And so that same agency contacted me and said, hey, you know, we were about to do this and there's big interest and, you know, would you want to see if you can put this together and go out? And of course, I checked with some of the, you know, the Grateful Dead sources to make sure this wouldn't be a problem because, you know, I didn't want to do something that was not right and have people coming down on me. And everyone's, oh, go ahead, Melvin, do your thing. You know, it's all over now. We're not going to do anything. And so I did. And, you know, at the earlier stages, it wasn't quite, I hadn't dialed into it like I have now. But that was the beginning of us continuing working. You know, and of course, a lot of things happened in the course of that to where we are now.
There seems to be a new era of appreciation for the Grateful Dead and the work and life of Jerry Garcia. What's it been like to sort of see this reemergence come in the last few years?
Well, it's definitely growing. It's amazing how this thing gets bigger every year. I thought, you know, because I didn't really know after Jerry passed, I said, oh, I'll give it, you know, two or three, four years, and this will all die down and be something different. And boy, was I wrong about that. It's just every year it gets stronger. There's all kind of Garcia bashes and Jerry birthday and death day and Jerry life this and new bands are coming out playing the music different kind of ways. There are festivals that have bloomed. It's like a flower. You know, it's being watered and blooming so many different directions. There's all kind of festivals that's inspired from the Grateful Dead and Jerry Garcia. It's still growing. And the movement is just as big as ever. You have young folks that I talked to that was not even alive when we were performing with Jerry, that come up and they know the words. Because I'm looking at them when we're performing a song, they're looking and singing along with us every word to the song. And they were not even born, you know. So, you know, they obviously was raised in a family of deadheads or something like that, or just chose to learn this music once they became aware of it, you know. And there's so a lot of folks gravitate towards us, and I'm sure other bands, more myself, because I shook hands with the men that they seek to know about. So they never saw Jerry, but they come out and see me. And not only me, a lot of other bands that are doing the music different ways.
And the movement's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There are a lot of bands that are making living off of emulating either the Garcia Band or the Grateful Dead. And every town, every city, there are two or three Grateful Dead bands. Amazing.
So on this upcoming tour, what's the band looking like and what kind of material are you presenting?
Well, we're doing the whole Garcia repertoire. There's everything that I've ever did with Jerry, we do. And some things that I did not do with Jerry, but Jerry had other bands like Reconstruction, and I think there's another one, I can't call the name of it, a few more, and they did different material before I got there. My friend Merle Saunders played with him for quite a while himself. And they did kind of different stuff. Tempos and vibes were different as the years went on. So I even reached back and grabbed some things that I didn't do with Jerry, but I knew he did it. So I kind of feel like as long as Jerry Garcia did this song and we're like a tribute to Jerry Garcia, we can do the song. So I do a lot of that. And now just recently I do one or two, no more than three, of Grateful Dead material that Jerry led just for a twist, and the folks seem to like it. It's like the best of both worlds. We got the Garcia covered, but here's what Garcia did in the Grateful Dead, and I pick one or two songs a night, just throwing it as a treat and a tribute, and then folks just go nuts when they hear, because we don't normally do that. That's not what we do. So I'm trying to cover all grounds, and it's just getting bigger and bigger.
So a big part of the Grateful Dead experience was this fascination with psychedelia and experimentations with drugs of that nature. Was that an experience that you felt like you had to have or did have to get in touch with how they were playing and how Jerry was inspired to compose and play?
Well, I don't know much about that. I never had it. I still to this day never had it. I draw from a whole nother well, a water of what I do on stage. I watched and saw things that went on, and I didn't totally agree with it all, but who was I? You know, I was just trying to find my way, you know, and just big pond. There were nights that I thought we were horrible, and I thought we were horrible because they had indulged too much in whatever they're indulging in. And there are other nights that they're electrifying and they're experimental. And it's like, oh, we didn't do that last time. What's going on here? And we're just, but this jam band music, that's what it is. And, you know, I hate to think that you got to do drugs to use that imagination, that part of your mind. But, you know, who knows why people need to do what they do. I don't know. But I was not a part of that.
So Jerry Garcia's struggles with addiction defined a large part of his life. Was that something that affected your playing in the band or your experience with him as a collaborator?
The only way that it affected me, I thought at times we could be a lot tighter and a lot better than we were. And what I mean is, you know, dotting your I's and crossing your T's is like when you would come around to an accent or the end of a verse or going into a chorus and you're doing these punches or these notes that we all should play together to make it sound really good. Sometimes they were so sloppy, like everybody knows where it is. Why can't we hit this at one time and make this really big and huge? And it's like, you know, we're hitting it all sloppy and, you know, it's like it used to piss me off because, you know, I was striving to be this great musician in this great band. But what I had to learn, it had nothing to do with that in that style of music. Nothing to do how tight you were. As a matter of fact, that might have been a problem. It had to deal with what leaves the heart, reach the heart. It's the vibe. It's just the vibe that comes off the stage. And it had nothing to do with tightness. It's not R&B. It's not gospel. It's not what I kind of knew. It's just what you feel in your heart at that moment, at that time. And so that's why nothing sounded the same every night. And we could play the same song, and it was different. Sometimes the tempos were too slow. Or this is dragging. Oh, come on, guys, you know. Or sometimes it was really fast. It flew by really fast, you know. But it's all in the jam band style music, and I had to learn. It's not about how tight you are; it's how about the vibe that's going on in the room. You know, that transcends out in the audience, and they're grooving in the moment. Not about, hey man, they sound horrible. It's all right. It's all cool to them. And I had to learn this style of music. That's what this is. You know, it's not about how tight you really can be. They don't care about that. So it was a lesson for me to learn.
When you think about your time playing with Jerry, what comes to mind? Like, what do you hold on to from that experience?
Well, what I just spoke about, a lot of that, you know, because I still have a tendency when in rehearsals, come on, guys, let's work it this way, let's work that. But now I thought for a long time I need to be very strong in the likeness of exactly what I did with Jerry. And everybody playing, basically playing John Kahn, drummer, playing Dave Kemper, and a lead guitar playing exactly Jerry. But I realized over time you can relax with that because there is no Jerry. There is no Jerry out there. You know, we're just all trying to keep the movement alive, and no one can sit in his seat 100% and be a Jerry. But they have similarities. All different guitar players, they got this style, and they do this thing Jerry used to do, and that warms your heart because that's what you grew up on, that's what you heard in records, that's what you heard in live shows, and it makes you feel good. You hear the likeness of Jerry coming from the stage, even though it's not him. So I've learned that I can loosen up now and not be so tight on what I thought was right. It's okay if we go in a different direction, or if we take a song and give it a reggae feel, or take a shuffle and make it a blues, same lyrics, same song, but we can do our own thing. I think it has come to the point that we can kind of move on in a small direction of changing some things to keep it fresh or new, or give you your own identity of this music. And that's some of the things we're doing now.
You've played hundreds of venues around the world. What are your favorite places to play? Are there any specific locations or fan bases that come to mind?
Well, Hawaii was one. Unfortunately, I don't think we ever went overseas to Europe or anything. I know Grateful Dead did, but not the Garcia Band. But New York has its likeness, of course, and at that time, L.A. was, you know, was another one of my favorite. We a lot of Boston, Baltimore, a lot of beautiful places because we traveled, you know, in the best way we could and stayed in great hotels, and the venues were all great, you know. I think Ill River, you know, was always highlight some of the things we did up there, you know, and quite a few places I really enjoyed when we did them.
After the Grateful Dead ended and this sort of new generation of jam bands emerged, do you feel like any of those bands really captured that same spirit with the same, you know, passion and that vibe that you were talking about? Do you feel like it's been passed on successfully?
Well, I think now there's only a few bands that are out there that's really trying to emulate what happened. And as we know, I think Dark Star Orchestra is one of them. They really they have a certain year and era that they do that they really copy the Grateful Dead. I think they try and copy them from the beginning to the end. Even the set list is they'll do a whole set of what they did that year and that era, that month, whatever it was. They're about the only ones that I'm aware of that is doing that. Of course, you have Dead and Company. That's a different vibe, but they're just doing what they want to do. You know, I haven't seen a Dead and Company show. I've heard it live on the radio, but I think a lot of the material is slower than what they did with the Grateful Dead. So they're kind of like, you know, I think in the Bob Ware direction or whoever direction, they're saying, well, it's just, this is where we want the temples. And, you know, so all, I think a lot of the newer bands, people that had nothing to do with them, They're all doing spin-off. They'll do the song. It may not be nothing like how we did it with Jerry, but they're just doing the song and still a tribute to the Grateful Dead and Jerry. There's a band called, I think, J-Raz Almost Dead, I think it's called that, and they do everything kind of totally different, and they have a big egg fan base following him, you know. And so people now are just kind of taking their own spin of this same music and songs and doing their own way, and it's working for many people.
Do you still play the B3 organ?
I do.
So tell me about the B3. It's been this iconic part of the American soundscape for decades now. Why is it so special?
That's a really good question. that's a good question. Why is it special? There's a sound about this thing. You know, there are tons of organs made, but just the B3, only one that had this certain sound that required a Leslie Shepherd speaker, a big speaker that spins and do all this wonderful thing. And there was just a sound about it that was created when it was played well. And I mean, through years back, I don't even know when it started, but you and Noah Hammond organ, Booker T and MGs, and like I said, Jimmy, and further back than then, Shotgun songs, R&B songs, and rock song, Hold Your Head High, was all done with that B3. And it's just a sound that it gave that was just in history. Janis Joplin and Otis Redding and, Jimi Hendrix. You hear that organ, the same organ, you know, played different ways. And today it is still the same organ. So guys that know how to handle it in whatever genre of music you're playing, there's that sound. I mean, piano is piano and guitar, you know, and bass. You hear the same instrument, but something about what that organ creates, you know, it's a little different from all, and it can be played so many different ways with so many different sounds. And I'm just fortunate to kind of, I have chosen the organ and made a living off of it.